you're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. My name is Alex DeBoer.
I'm Ben Nelson.
I'm Violet Miles.
I'm Zachary Tharp.
And I'm Jackie Setbolt.
It's Thursday, October 3rd at 5:05 p.m., we're broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
On today's show, we'll be covering two civic issues with national and international implications.
First, we're going to take you to last Friday's climate strike and talk with the individual strikers who made up the sort of astonishing 100,000-person crowd demanding climate change.
After that, you'll hear a report from Monday's demonstration held by Strathcona residents and business owners demanding street calming measures to be implemented on Prior Street.
But first, we have Grace Nozick, the student director of the UBC Climate Hub and a PhD candidate in law, to tell us about early voting in the Nest and the importance of young people coming out to vote in our federal election. Hi, Grace. Could you tell us about the early voting on campus?
Yeah, sure can. So there will be voting starting this Saturday, October 5th, and going 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th in the Nest, in the ballroom on the second floor. And those hours vary. On Saturday, they're 9 to 6, Sunday, 12 to 4, and then the other days, they're 10 to 10. But it's this really incredible opportunity for students to vote in their central hub. And for this timing alone, students can actually vote in any riding in the country as long as they can prove their address in that riding.
And what makes this voting opportunity so special?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, both the fact that they can vote anywhere in the country, it'll be the easiest time for them to do that. And most students are usually eligible to either vote in a home riding or here in Vancouver, wherever they feel like they have residence. And so if they feel like they want to vote back home, this is really an incredible opportunity to do that. Something else that's really important is this will be the only time that students can vote in the Nest in the entirety of this election. Elections Canada chose not to put polling stations in the Nest for either the general election day or advance polling. So this is really an incredible opportunity to use this central location to vote anywhere in the country.
And could you share with us how millennial and Gen Z voters can get their peers out to the polls?
Yeah, of course. So one really cool and exciting thing about this election is actually that millennials and Gen Z, for the first time in Canada's history, will be the largest voting bloc. So it's this incredible moment. We're seeing a big surge. We're seeing young people getting ready to vote. And it's going to be this moment where they really get to center the election issues that they care about. And obviously, we know the federal election impacts truly everything we do on a day-to-day basis. So exciting that our generations will have this opportunity. And then there's some amazing social science that says that voting is just an incredibly social habit. So one, if you vote when you're younger, you're more likely to vote when you're older. But also we have this incredible ability to influence our social groups to vote. So especially we can use social media to do that. You can post that you voted, that you're going with a voting buddy. You can remind people of the plan. People are much more likely to vote if they actually have a voting plan. I'm going to go on Tuesday after class. So it's really exciting. We have the power to get our peers out.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks, Grace. That's really helpful.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So now we're going to turn to some local headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. Zach, can you please take it away for us?
Yes, Alex. Earlier this week, a UBC professor named Dr. Marina Adshade, I hope I didn't butcher that name.
I think that's right.
tweeted that seven students were reportedly drugged at a UBC fraternity this past weekend. Of course, this is something we've heard a lot about in the recent years, particularly from fraternities across the United States. A number of American universities, including Louisiana State, Penn State, and the University of Oklahoma, have come under fire for hazing, committing racist acts, and sexual assault. Sororities at these schools have also faced controversy. What sets Dr. Adshade's observation on fraternities apart is her questioning of their very existence. She asked the question many have been thinking, why are fraternities and Greek life as a whole still a thing? As an ex-fraternity member myself, I do agree with, to a certain extent. I believe that fraternities and sororities have potential to impact people's lives positively and at a pivotal point where new university students are deciding what they want to do with their life and who they want to be. But at the same time, frats and sororities have also proven to have dangerous qualities, like these stories we so often see in the news. So has Greek life become more of a liability than an asset? Places like Harvard University think so and have already begun actions to phase out secret societies in Greek life. But will UBC become the next school to follow in these footsteps?
Well, we'll have to see, Zach. On to local sports. So the City of Vancouver, in partnership with the Vancouver School Board, has approved plans to develop its first public regulation track and field facility. The Vancouver Parks Board voted unanimously to go through with a 10-year action plan. The goal is to upgrade track and field facilities around the city and build a brand new facility at Vancouver Technical School in East Van. It would be the first in Vancouver, and to be clear, UBC doesn't count because it's not technically part of Vancouver, to feature an 8-lane track. 8 lanes is the regulation amount for competition. This would mean that Vancouver could host track meets at the provincial and national levels. In the past, track athletes have had to compete either at UBC facilities or in other areas of Metro Vancouver, such as Burnaby or Richmond. The VanTech track development will include lights, a grass field, a field house, and throwing circles, among other features. The VanTech project is valued at around $7 million. A plan for another regulation field at Winston Churchill Secondary is also now under review. Facilities at Templeton Secondary and Carisdale Park also appear to be in the works for getting upgrades. This comes in a big week for Canadian track and field, as Sage Watson just broke the Canadian women's 400-meter hurdles world record. The plan was also approved on the birthday of the late Canadian track and field legend Harry Jerome.
Oh my. It's interesting. It's interesting to hear about that, Ben. And it's interesting that that happened on those two important track and field occasions, like Harry Jerome's birthday. There's a statue of him, of course, in Stanley Park. But while we're talking about the park board and things like building tracks, at the same time, the park board is dealing with some pretty serious social issues. So I just wanted to highlight what is no longer very timely, but also really important just to make sure people are abreast of the situation. So last Thursday, the park board held an emergency meeting. It was called by the two NPA park board commissioners, John Cooper and Trisha Baker, and they called it in the hopes of getting approval for a court injunction to legally remove the campers at Oppenheimer Park. As everyone knows, there is a tent city there right now. The NPA commissioners were, however, unsuccessful. So it was a 4-2 vote, and the board refused to seek an injunction. So instead, they've committed to supporting voluntary collaborative decampment of the park. So they will not legally be forcing people out. They're currently looking for strategies to find better housing for those living in the tents. About 130 units have already been found for people living in the park, but there's still a bunch of people there, I think about over 100. And in the meantime, the weather gets colder. So hopefully they'll be able to find some solutions ASAP. Serena, do you want to tell us about your headline? Yeah.
So I mainly want to introduce this Tuesday. There's an event on October the 1st from around 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. I witnessed the rallies of students from Hong Kong and students from mainland China competed with each other in front of the UBC AMS Nest. The mainland students said that they had been experiencing the slanders and hatred speeches, as well as paintings of separatist narratives from the Hong Kong protesters. These severely hurt their feelings on their national day, so that's why they decided to wave their national flag and sing their national anthem to show their stance on the solidarity of China. When they saw the Hong Kong students drawing umbrellas on the ground with chalk, many of them thought it was inappropriate for them to express their demands in that way. Many of them were also unfamiliar with the meaning of umbrellas attached to the umbrella movement, but it was the radical separatists that they were against. The students from Hong Kong emphasized on their five demands for the anti-extradition bill movement: the principles of democracy and freedom, the legacies and relevance of the umbrella movement, saying that most of them are against the separatists advocating for Hong Kong's independence from China as well, and are against the violent protesters. But there also were certain radical members that have controversial ways of expressing their demands. So for me personally, I think there's certain miscommunications amongst the Hong Kong and mainland Chinese advocates that only open and rational dialogues can help resolve. So that's what I'm trying to promote here.
Okay, great. Thanks for that, Thank Serena. You.
And those were our headlines. We'll now turn to our first feature of the day, last Friday's climate strike.
On Friday, September 27th, people began gathering at City Hall around 11 a.m. and by 1 p.m. were marching across the Cambie Street Bridge into Vancouver's downtown core. The strike moved slowly and ended in front of Vancouver's public library at West Georgia and Hamilton, where a die-in took place. Turnout for the strike far exceeded projections. The Vancouver police estimated the crowd downtown reached 100,000 people. The News Collective was at the strike. Reporters Violet Miles, Teo Ellsmore, and Alex Tribolsi spoke with a diversity of strikers, young and old, to get a sense of their motivations for missing school or work. Let's hear what they had to say.
This past Friday, over 85 cities and towns participated in climate strikes across Canada. It's estimated that over 100,000 people showed up to Vancouver's climate strike.
I'm here today to September 27th. In the midst of the protest march for the environment and climate change. Right now, we're on the Cambie Bridge, surrounded by thousands of people. I look behind me and I look in front and I just see just crowds and crowds of people with signs out supporting, chanting. I don't know if you can hear in the background.
This is what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like.
Most of the people out here are young, high school, kids. There's also a lot of millennial young adults out here in support with their own signs. It's really an optimistic thing to see these many people out in force supporting their planet and hopeful of their future.
What do we want?
Climate action!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Climate action!
When do we want it?
Violet, Teo, and myself, Alex, spoke with a number of demonstrators about what motivated them to march.
So what brought you out here today?
Well, we're here because it's a climate emergency worldwide, and the movement by a 16-year-old Swedish girl has managed to propagate a crowd in the world, and the world is responding, and we're here to respond in solidarity with the rest of the world.
Does the outpouring of people that we have now, does that give you hope?
Yeah, I mean, it gives me total hope, because, you know, we have to rely on grassroots, we have to rely on mobilization from people. We're in an election right now, and there's an opportunity to make changes and to see the kind of mobilization occurring on the one topic that matters more than any other topic right now, which is our future, it gives me total hope.
And also the turnout of young people, what does that signify for you?
It really adds to the hope because of the fact that the young people are the ones that are the future, right? And they're the ones that are acutely aware that it's their future that's at risk because of inaction for decades. And ignoring the science.
I suppose they're also helped by the fact that their high schools are, in a sense, letting them come out here and join. Do you think it's important for institutions of education to take a stance on these kinds of climate strikes?
Yeah, I think it's so important, and beyond just educational institutions, obviously educators have a responsibility to take stock of what's going on and where society's moving, and to be leaders and to be, you know, to inspire students and young people. But this whole wait and see approach in general within our governments is what's got us to this point. So, you know, if our young people are going to be the ones that make the change that we need to see, that we want to be in the world, then the educators have a duty and responsibility.
Thank you for talking to me.
You bet.
Do you mind if I get your name?
Yeah, my name is Chad Wilkinson.
Nice to meet you.
On the 23rd of September, just a few days before the strike, the Vancouver School Board passed a motion allowing students to be excused from classes to attend. However, not all school districts agreed. My colleague Teo spoke with some students from North Vancouver who were striking despite opposition from school administration.
I assume you guys are high school. Did the high school give you a day off?
No, we skipped classes today to come
our
here.
Our school is actually against it, so as a group, we kind of walked out or kind of like just left.
Your school was against walking out on the climate strike?
Yeah, our principal is.
What school is this?
It's in North Van.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I want to ask you guys, so how old are you guys?
I'm 16.
I'm 13.
So 16.
And so why are you guys out here today?
I'm just here for the climate. Like, it's an issue that our generation needs to take care of because the generation before us isn't doing anything about it.
And we care about our Earth and we want to save it.
Are you guys optimistic about the future of our planet?
No, I'm actually quite worried about it.
I'm worried, but I think we can change what is happening right now.
Does seeing the groups of people here in the thousands give you any optimism or hope?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yes.
Well, thanks, guys.
We were also interested in a sign we saw, which said, "Decolonize your mind." My colleague Violet spoke with Brandon from the Haida and Nishka Nations about why
Hello.
He connects climate change with colonialism.
My name's Brandon Gosnell.
And why are you here today?
I'm here to stand with the students, stand in solidarity with them, as well as the Coast Salish Nations here that are trying to defend the land against the Trans Mountain expansion.
Great. And can you talk a little bit about your sign?
So our sign says, decolonize your mind. And no consent, no tankers, no pipeline, no means no. Essentially what the many nations along the Trans Mountain right-of-way have been saying. They haven't been properly consulted. And when they say no, they're not accepting any money. They're not going to take any compromises. They want a definite no, but they haven't been able to assert their rights and say no to the project. And that's why they're in the court right now, and that's why we're here.
Awesome. And do you think that marches and protests like this help to bring issues like this to light and put pressure on politicians to enforce these policies and stop things like the pipeline?
I do believe it is a definite sign of change that people want. And for me, I think the next step would be to evolve this into more non-violent direct actions. Like this whole movement, which has been going on for just over a year now, has grown to 4 million people last week. Last Friday, around the world, were doing what we're doing here in a march, a rally, starting from City Hall or Parliament, and all have the same message of wanting to reduce carbon emissions, keep the target under the IPCC and Paris Agreement of 1.5 degrees to calm the crisis as much as possible before it gets to the tipping point. And I think the next step would definitely to be, wherever applicable, evolve it to nonviolent direct actions and occupations for these city halls and parliaments that people are striking at.
And have you come here with other people who are also from Indigenous communities?
To my right here holding the banner is Jim. He's been involved up at Burnaby Mountain as well to keep an eye on Trans Mountain and try and document as much as possible the work that they're doing. Because to normal people, it might seem like it's all going well and it's all going according to plan, but to a more trained eye, we can see that some of the works they're doing might be illegal. They might have permits, but they might not have the correct ones. And we never know when something might happen. Like recently there's been signs of potentially contaminated soil. We don't know what that might be. It could be oil, it could be something else. But we have been documenting it as it happens, and hopefully once we get more people to identify what's going on and take a look at it, we can pressure them through the Environment Ministry or National Energy Board or any other authorities.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the work you do.
This is a public service announcement to the Canadian government. You declared a climate emergency and bought a pipeline the next day.
This march is very timely with the upcoming federal election, as climate change is sure to be on plenty of voters' minds.
You have failed the public, and you will be held accountable for your hypocrisy and your lies. We demand a national emergency action plan dictated by a citizens' assembly. To all Canadian citizens, rebel! Your government is guilty of criminal inaction that will result in ecocide and social collapse.
You can tell people are concerned with the politics of this issue and the policies that these parties are going to present.
Violet spoke to Michael about voting in the 2019 election.
What's your name?
My name is Michael.
Nice to meet you, Michael. And will you be voting in the upcoming election?
I will be voting, yes.
And have you decided where your vote lies?
No, I haven't. And it's getting more difficult year after year. And I know where my vote has landed in previous years federally. I know that this election, a lot of people will be voting strategically. It's kind of like the classic argument. It's a classic Canadian election, which is, you know, a vote for the NDP might be a vote for the Conservatives. You know, it's kind of like the lesser evil, and that's too bad. And that's where I'd like to have seen proportional representation come in, and unfortunately that hasn't happened, and that was a really big disappointment for me in the last election. And I think that's a problem, and that needs to be addressed, and hopefully we'll see more young people come out and vote, because we need them. We need them more than ever. And to be honest with you, it's the non-voters and the voters who haven't voted before that is going to win the election.
Yeah, and will your vote be impacted by the policies you see revolving around climate justice?
A lot of it is going to be me looking at every single party's platform on climate justice, and a lot of it also will be looking at my writing, and there will be a consideration whether I'm going to vote strategically or whether I'm going to vote with my consciousness. That's ultimately the ongoing challenge, right. I think, for a lot of Canadians.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Organizers of the climate strike were hoping for 15,000 people to show up. In the end, roughly 100,000 people showed up to the march. As more and more people began to call for climate action, this rally was the tip of the melting iceberg. Thank you for listening.
Climate action!
When do we want it?
Now!
Reported by Violet Miles, Tail Ellsmore, and myself, Alexander Chabolsi. Editing done by Alex DeBoer.
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Climate action!
When do we want it?
Now!
From September 26th to October 11th is the Vancouver International Film Festival. VIFF presents the world's best cinema fused with related talks and events in a unique Films Plus model. Annually, VIFF presents over 320 films and events, plays host to approximately 400 industry professionals from around the globe, and boasts the largest Canadian film program in the world. Tickets are on sale now. Go to VIFF.org or the Van City Theatre box office to purchase yours today.
Wake up.
Artivism, UBC's student-run festival of art and social change, is back for its second year. Artivism 2019 will be hosting a screening of The Celluloid Closet at CITR on Friday, October 4th. Come by CITR at 1 p.m. to catch it and a discussion on queer identities in film with UBC Film Society. That's Friday, October 4th at 1 p.m. in the CITR Lounge.
And we're back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We spent the beginning of the show covering headlines and bringing you to last week's mass climate strike in Vancouver. Like that climate strike, our next story has implications beyond the local.
That's right. So on Monday, bright and early, myself, Alex DeBoer, and Jackie Sepelt, I'm saying it right now, I think, headed down to Pryor Street and Hawk Street, which is right at the corner of Strathcona Park. And we went there to check out a demonstration to calm Pryor Street. So for a bit of context, Pryor Street has become sort of a de facto arterial, which connects East Van with Vancouver's downtown by way of the viaducts. So a lot of industrial trucks drive down Clark, turn left on Pryor, head along Pryor, and go over the viaducts and into downtown. So the problem is Pryor was never actually designed to hold the kind of traffic and industrial transport vehicles that it currently is holding. So there have been actually numerous accidents and deaths on Pryor Street. And neighborhood residents say the busy street prevents them from safely accessing Strathcona Park, which again borders the park. So the reason this seemingly hyper-local issue intersects with broader national politics is that the federal government is twinning the nearby train route that runs along Glen Drive, which connects with the Port of Vancouver and is operated by CN Rail. So that is going to cause potentially more stops to traffic. So more, you know, frustrated drivers having to wait for a train and then gunning it along Pryor. But at the same time, this increased train traffic also is an opportunity for City Hall to get funding from the federal government so that they can adequately deal with this change and build infrastructure that makes it safe for residents of Strathcona to access the park. So basically, this is what council voted on Wednesday night, and they did vote in favor, 8-2, to build an underpass at the soon-to-be-expanded train crossing at Venables and Pryor, and also they endorsed calming measures to quiet Pryor Street and make it safer. So we want to talk about the motion that passed, some of the details contained in it, but first we want to take you to Monday's demonstration and hear what some of the different stakeholders had to say. So let's take a listen to that.
The reality is that as an arterial and a truck route, Pryor Street is not safe.
Monday, September 30th, saw yet another protest to calm Pryor Street in Strathcona. Pryor is an important road linking downtown Vancouver with East Vancouver by way of the viaducts. However, Pryor Street also runs through a residential neighborhood with Strathcona Park on one side and houses on the other. As local residents pointed out, traffic on Pryor has caused multiple accidents in the past, leading to the loss of loved ones. Early Monday morning, CITR reporters Alex DeBoer and Jackie Sebelt met at Pryor and Hawk Streets. There, protesters were crossing back and forth on Pryor, using a crosswalk and disrupting traffic.
So let's start pressing that button and crossing the street. Let's safely make a little bit of a disruption here.
Pryor Street has been controversial for years. It now stands at the center of an expansion that involves both the federal government and the city of Vancouver. There are two motions involving Pryor in City Hall right now. One is to rezone St. Paul's Hospital from the West End to Pryor, and the other is to demolish the viaducts that feed into it. The viaducts that connect Pryor to downtown were initially meant to expand into a highway network in the 1970s. In the face of huge resident opposition, the plan was scrapped, but that meant Pryor became a de facto arterial road, something that has not gone down well with residents since. One of those residents is Pete Fry, a city councillor. He spoke at the protest about how he entered politics because of an accident that happened on Pryor Street.
We've been asking for Prior Street to be calmed for a great number of years. For those of you who know me for long enough, I got involved in politics first when I lost a good friend to this very street. He was hit by a car at Princess and Prior, and he never survived, ultimately. And that inspired me to work with all of you, and we want to see this street downgraded to a local collector.
Yes.
And that's that. There's no, this is not sufficient width. It never has been sufficient width for an arterial.
The Strathcona Residents Association say they have been waiting for Prior Street to be calmed since 1972. They strongly oppose to the motion before City Hall, which seeks to further widen the road. That plan is the latest version of what the city wants to implement after demolishing the viaducts. We spoke to Councillor Fry about what he expects from the council.
So the notion, as we're considering it, and as I'd like to see this go, is that Prior just gets calmed and we just really don't have an arterial here. We don't have an arterial replacement.
What would happen to all the traffic?
Well, as part of our climate emergency declarations and stuff, we're actively trying to actually reduce traffic, and that's a big part of this equation is you know, when the idea of induced demand. So if we build a big arterial, well, we're just inviting more cars to use it. So by not building big arterials, we're saying, you know what, we'd rather you use public transit, we'd rather you use active transportation. So, you know, what the longstanding community vision for this street would be, you know, like a greenway. So with, you know, bike path and or sort of, you know, a AAA bike route, retain the transit access, but it becomes a local collector rather than an arterial.
The city's current plan is to create a 5-lane underpass by taking some land from Strathcona Park, which it claims is the cheapest possible option. Strathcona Park is where Monday's protest gathered, and the desire to keep it untouched is one of the central driving forces behind opposition to the plan. For example, one of the earlier plans involved building a highway straight through the park, which was met with strong opposition. At the protest, Alex and Jackie talked about how much the park meant to local residents.
And people are crossing back and forth on Prior, safely using the crosswalk. But the goal is to create a disruption and to make it clear that people need to use this park.
Not only is the park important to local residents, their children, and their pets, it's also important to local business owners opposed to the plans. We spoke to Ryan, one of the co-owners of the Lapalo Brewing Company, on Prior.
So we come to the park here like almost every day because it's just like basically across the street from the brewery. And there's never anybody here because you have to cross a busy street to get to it. And so obviously I think if this was calmed as was promised, then the park would finally be utilized to its potential instead of having to cross a highway to get to it. So yeah, that's another thing. And also, yeah, I think just for us in Casa di Gelato, like being in the middle of a construction site for God knows how long would be, probably would mean the end of both of our businesses.
As Ryan mentioned, the city of Vancouver has promised to calm Prior Street multiple times in the past. However, their latest push to turn the street into a proper arterial road is also tied to federal plans to expand freight and cargo coming to and from the port of Vancouver. This expansion involves twinning the train line running along Glen Drive. That means more trains and thus more stopping of traffic trying to cross Glen and head downtown. Residents at the rally said that delays caused by the trains already cause frustrated drivers to drive more aggressively along Prior, and that the twinning will lead to further safety risks for pedestrians. However, Strathcona Residents Association member Trevor Smith sees the trains as a necessary evil.
Trains are going to be carrying the containers, which is makes sense on one level, but it's a little bit like saying to a community or to a person, look, you don't have a choice. We're going to be burning fossil fuels in your home for a certain period of time because we've got a job to do. You know, it's too bad. You have a choice. Whether you're going to burn a locomotive engine in your house for an hour, or we can have 50 diesel trucks burning this for an hour. What would you prefer? And so, yes, it's a little bit better to go with the train, maybe.
The fact the federal and city governments both have stakes in whether or not Prior Street expands caused many high-profile appearances at the protest, including Jenny Kwan, the NDP MP for Vancouver East. She spoke to us about the need for proper discussion on the issue.
From my perspective, the city actually can try to convene a table by bringing the federal government to the table, calling for a meeting with them, with the rails, and with the port. And to say that we need to come up with a permanent solution here for the residents, and the impact is significant, and is impacting people's quality of life, the safety issues, and make sure that they become partners in contributing to this long-term and viable solution for the residents.
And as a federal MP, is that something you're fighting for?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to work with the residents and the City of Vancouver to advance this perspective. I actually do think that it is all of our responsibility to take care of neighborhoods. Strathcona is one of the oldest, in fact, it is the oldest neighborhood in the City of Vancouver. And, you know, back in the day, Strathcona, the residents here stopped the freeway. We can do this again.
That history of unrest means this week's City Hall motion may finally resolve 40 years of civic promises and rest in protest on Pryor. But for now, it remains to be seen whether there will ever be calm on this restive street.
Thanks everyone for coming out today!
Thank you for listening. The reporting was done by Alex DeBoer and Jackie Seppelt, and editing and production was done by me, Akshay Kulkarni.
All right. Special thanks to Akshay for producing and editing that story. So obviously we're aware that the conclusion of that story is not current. It was made before... it was completed before Wednesday's decision, but we still thought that it provided... some context to the discussion, as well as a sense of what the demonstration was like on Monday. So, yeah, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, and we're talking about Pryor Street, the calming of Pryor Street. And so, as mentioned, yesterday, City Council actually voted on a motion to quiet Pryor Street, and at the same time to build an underpass at Pryor and Venables. So the council voted 8-2. So it was a pretty clear victory. Not a ton of votes against. It was Colleen Hardwick and Councillor Bly, I believe, were the two to vote against, two NPA councillors. So firstly, there's two main components to this, as I mentioned. It's the underpass and street calming. So let's talk a little bit about the details of the street calming that... will go forward. The aim of the street calming is to, if it's not clear already, slow roadway vehicles and look to divert transport trucks to other routes. So the specific measures in the motion include downgrading Pryor and Venables to a collector street, which Pete Fry spoke about in the piece we just heard. So that would mean the street would have a 30-kilometer speed limit near the park. So I imagine just directly in front of the park. Council will also be trying out all-day parking on both sides of the street and temporarily adding curb bulges. So the idea here is to reduce the traffic to just one lane per direction, which was another one of their measures. And then also staff will be monitoring vehicles who shortcut on Pryor. So I guess emergency vehicles and other vehicles often use the street to do U-turns and to use it to access other parts of the city and end up cutting off other traffic. So they're going to be studying that. And we'll probably produce a report on that. So according to staff, these measures could be in place by as early as 2020. So that's over a year away at the earliest. Now, when it comes to the underpass aspect of this motion, the underpass is set to be built, as I mentioned, at Venables and Pryor. So that project relies on the federally owned Port of Vancouver and the publicly owned CN Rail. Those are the two other project partners in the construction of this underpass. So while the construction was approved by the City of Vancouver, the $125 million the project will cost to be constructed, will actually be paid for not at all by the City of Vancouver, but instead by the federal government, and I think CN Rail as well. So as council has made it clear the city of Vancouver is not paying for this. But that means that the city staff are going to have to keep working with these partners and are going to have to check in with city council several more times over the year to make sure the funding is still there, to see how the project is progressing and deal with any hurdles along the way. So if you're wondering why it costs this much money, what the $125 million is going towards, it will include constructing the roadway, acquiring property to build it on, excavating the underpass, building the bridge deck, the bridge deck structure, drainage, installing a pumping room and mechanical systems, as well as the management of the project, design, and engineering. All these things are going towards the $125 million. So I was able to reach the business owner who we spoke with in the earlier piece, which was an overview of Monday's demonstration. So I reached Ryan Parrott, who is a co-owner of Lupolo Brewing, which is at Glen and Pryor, which is basically right where this underpass is going to be built. And if you recall in our piece, he mentioned how construction could kind of be a death sentence for his business. So we wanted to check in with him and see what he thought of this motion that had been passed by council yesterday. Let's take a listen to what Ryan had to say.
Hello, Brewing Company on Venable Street.
Right. And I first talked to you this Monday at the rally at Hawks and Pryor to demand street calming along the street. And this Wednesday, yesterday night, council voted in an 8-2 vote to pass a motion which both implements calming measures along Pryor Street, but also supports the construction of an underpass. And you had mentioned when we spoke on Monday about the issues construction might cause to your business, which is basically right where the underpass is being built. So I'm wondering what your reaction is to City Council's decision.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like two-part. I am pleased that it seems like they are going to be calming Pryor, as was promised to this community several times. So I think, you know, that's a partial win for sure. I'm obviously like pretty concerned about how the construction and where the underpass actually starts and finishes, how that's going to affect both ourselves here at Lupolo and also another kind of staple business in the neighborhood, Cassidy Gelato, who has been here for forever. They're an institution in this neighborhood. So, yeah, I mean, I think obviously at this point we're going to have to do our best to figure out exactly how and to what extent this will impact our business here.
Right, because right now the construction plans are fairly up in the air, even having secure funding.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways it's slightly comforting, I guess, to know that it's probably going to be quite a long time before anything tangible actually happens. So it will, you know, give us enough time to hopefully figure out what our next steps are. But yeah, I mean, obviously it's concerning and there's a lot of unknown still at this point as to what's going to happen and how it will be affected.
Right. But for now, you're not going to like sell the business right away or anything. You're kind of going to wait to see how this unfolds.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Great.
That's kind of all that we can do at this point is just wait and see.
And you mentioned you brought your child to the park and hung out in Strathcona Park sometimes yourself after work. Are you pleased with the street calming implementations that will be happening?
I am, for sure. Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, like I'm happy for that reason, and also just like this community that we're a part of. They obviously have been seeking that for a long time, and we've always supported them in that. And so yeah, we're happy that it looks like that's finally happening.
All right. And that was our interview with the co-owner of Lupolo Brewing, Ryan Parrott. So we're going to be speaking with Penny Crawford of the Strathcona Residents Association and getting their response to City Hall's recently passed motion. They were one of the main organizers of the demonstration on Monday and have been very vocal about implementing street calming measures. But the plan that they had most preferred was too expensive, which was a route option to reroute from Pryor to National Charles. And it was said to cost $400 million, and the city basically said, we can't afford it. So I'm just we're going to see what they think of this new plan and whether it's meeting the needs and demands they've set out. So let's go to a couple ads, and then we'll be back with Penny Crawford. Thanks so much for listening. Crackdown is coming to CITR. Starting August 30th, CITR will be airing the award-winning podcast about Vancouver's overdose crisis, told by drug user activists and supported by research. Crackdown is hosted by celebrated documentarian and longtime drug user Garth Mullins. Catch Crackdown every Friday morning at 8 a.m. here on CITR 101.9 FM.
University can be challenging. Fortunately, there are resources on campus that can help you overcome any obstacle you might be facing, be it mental health, academics, finances, spirituality, sexual health, or something else. You can learn about all of these resources on campuslightbox.ca, created by UBC students for UBC students. Browse, filter, or search to find the unique path to your well-being. Campus Lightbox, your guide to well-being.
Crackdown is coming to CITR. Starting August 30th, CITR will be airing the award-winning podcast about Vancouver's overdose crisis, told by drug user activists and supported by research. Crackdown is hosted by celebrated documentarian and longtime drug user Garth Mullins. Catch Crackdown every Friday morning at 8 a.m. here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
We don't have many enemies here at CITR, but we do like to keep our friends close. And when you become a member of CITR, our friends are your friends. So join CITR today to get discounts at Audiopile, Red Cat, Vinyl Records, Hooked on Phono, Rufus Guitar and Drum Shop, Tapestry Music, The Cinematheque, Kerner's Pub, Stormcrow, The Pint, and Fortune Sound Club. For more info, visit CITR.ca/friends. Hello, Penny Crawford?
Yes.
Hello, this is Alex Tabor from CITR. We are live on the radio. This is Democracy Watch. Sorry about the technical issue there.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you for bearing with me. And thank you to Isaac for helping with the phones just now. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. So would you mind just introducing yourself for our audience?
Absolutely. My name is Penny Crawford, and I'm one of the directors with the Strathcona Residents Association.
Great. Thank you so much. So what is the Strathcona Residents Association's response to the motion that was passed last night?
So, you know, it's still a little bit fresh, and there were a number of amendments to the report that the city engineering staff put forward. And honestly, we're still digesting some of those changes and wanting to reach out to city engineering to get some further clarification on a few of them. Overall, we're pleased that they have agreed to calm Pryor down to a 30-kilometer speed zone in front of the park. And we're definitely pleased that they're going to start a pilot project, perhaps sometime in the new year, with respect to some other calming measures along Pryor Venables. So that's mm-hmm. Those are all the positives mm-hmm. in terms of what was passed. We're a little concerned about the underpass at Prior Venables and how that may possibly impact our residents here in Strathcona as well as Grandview Woodlands if traffic continues to use this route as a commuter route or as a way of getting in and out of downtown.
Right. I don't know if you caught our earlier, we had just a brief interview with Ryan Parrott, who's the co-owner of Lupolo Brewing.
Oh, Ryan, great. Yeah,
yeah, and he expressed both his happiness at the traffic calming measures that will be implemented, but also his concern at the construction that's obviously going to be taking place basically right where his business is.
Absolutely. Well, there's his business, there's Casa Gelada, there's also a brand new seniors care home for Chinese people here in the community that's finishing construction as we speak, and they too will be greatly impacted by that underpass right at their doorstep.
Mm-hmm. And yourself and the Residents Association had wanted the route of National Charles to have an overpass built there. Is that the option you were most hoping for?
So that certainly was an option that came from the grassroots of the Strathcona residents mm-hmm. and was proposed to city engineering and ultimately became one of the options for the community panel that studied the matter earlier this year.
Right. But the cost was obviously too much, so the city vetoed that. What do you think about the plan to get the $125 million it'll cost to make this underpass from the federal government?
I think that's brilliant, and I think the federal government, the port, the rail have deep pockets and could have possibly put up more money, and perhaps we could have had this overpass somewhere south of Prior Venables, mm-hmm. Further away from the residents and businesses that are being impacted from where it is at Prior Venables. So I think there was a significant missed opportunity mm-hmm. to negotiate, and Jenny Kwan spoke to that at City Hall yesterday, offering to help the city councillors to come to the table along with the federal government, the port, and the rail as funding partners for this very important project that is going to have impacts for years to come. Even though they talk about electric trains someday, that's far into the future.
Right. I'm wondering if we could tack back a bit and you could tell me what some of the components you're still digesting are.
Okay, let's just give me a minute here.
Yeah, no worries.
Grab some notes. So they one of the amendments was a AAA bike route
mm-hmm.
along Prior. So, you know, we need some more detail on that and how mm-hmm. that will impact residents and parking along Prior. They've got an amendment here about directing staff to work with CN Rail, the port, and Metro to mitigate and combat health and environmental impacts on air quality. Obviously, we need some more detail around that. What does that really mean? Where will residents be able to participate in that? So those are some of the amendments that came forward last night that were agreed to, that were new to us. That wasn't in the initial report.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it seems like this project is going to be unfolding slowly, and a lot of the motions are sort of experiments, like implementing all-day parking on both sides of the street. That was sort of something they're trying out. And then in terms of the funding that is coming from the feds and CN Rail, that too will have to be kind of checked in on continuously. And so a lot of the project is basically, you know, somewhat still up in the air, it seems like. Would you say for now, it sounds like from what you're saying, the Strathcona Business Residents Association is pleased but not totally pleased with this? It's kind of a better, like, how happy with this project would you say you are?
Well, I guess I can describe it. We have monthly meetings, which coincidentally was last night, and around the group there was certainly a lot of happiness that we feel we've been heard. We put a lot of effort, a lot of time from residents has gone into raising our voice on this matter, and it's disappointing that we're constantly having to do that to stick up for our rights when it comes to air quality and livability and health and safety, but it seems that we constantly have to remind our elected officials what they're required to do on behalf of their citizens. Mm-hmm. So we were happy that they seem to have heard us. We made a lot of noise. But in terms of real wins, as you mentioned, there's not any firm dates around anything. Mm-hmm. So even in terms of when will that pilot start for calming prior, what will they really implement, and will it even go ahead? It's not a guarantee. It's a pilot with the intention of becoming permanent. But what if something goes sideways? So I think the residents are feeling uneasy about more than half of what was agreed to. So it's not as if we're saying we're 50% there. No one took a vote on that last night, so I'm not really sure where we really are. We weren't prepared last night to, you know, get a real sense of what people are thinking. So that was the immediate reaction, was some unease with some of the elements, and, mm-hmm. and certainly I don't think anyone ever envisioned in their ideal situation an underpass at Prior Venables.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your response, and I know there are a lot of complex elements to this project and a lot of uncertainty, so we appreciate you sharing a bit of your thoughts and your reaction. Thanks for your time, and have a great night, Penny.
Thank you for having me. It's been great to get a little bit of exposure to your audience. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. So that was Penny Crawford of the Strathcona Residents Association. She was good enough to join us live on air. So that is our show for today. You have been listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, bringing you local news from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. Please join us again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Also, a small personal plug. I have a new audio documentary out on CBC on the Doc Project. It's it's not everything I wanted it to be, but it is an interesting and important story about Esquamish and Portuguese community that lived on the eastern shore of Stanley Park at Brockton Point from 1860, the early 1860s, to 1931, at which time they were kicked out by the Vancouver Parks Board. So if you care about municipal politics and local news, you might want to check it out. Again, it's on the Doc Project's website. There's a podcast, and it will be airing tomorrow on CBC Radio 1 at 1 p.m., pretty sure. So thanks again for listening. And again, we'll be back next Thursday at 5. Stay tuned for more CITR programming, and have a great night.